It's All Things Considered on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Lorna Benson. In 1896, a new contraption appeared at the Minneapolis Bicycle Convention. The mysterious machine looked like a horse carriage, but it was powered by electricity and could reach the dizzying speed of 15 miles an hour. Just over 100 years ago, skeptical citizens in Minneapolis and St. Paul predicted this new automobile was just a passing fad. But a sickly 15-year-old boy in Northfield, Minnesota, began drawing up plans for his own model. In this month's installment of our Minnesota Century series, the story of Lincoln Fay. Against the wishes of his father and above the taunts of neighbors, he produced one of the state's first automobiles in his family barn. Years later, he recalled the experience in a written memoir.
Since early boyhood, I was troubled with asthma, which made it difficult to ride behind horses. This gave me the idea that horse-drawn vehicles should not be the only way to travel. It seemed queer that the railroad trains had to have steel rails on which to travel. Why couldn't a vehicle be constructed to travel on the road? I became more and more interested in the idea and found myself spending most of my spare time in the doorway of the Fox and Ferry machine shop in Northfield, watching their machine and moldings operations carefully. I decided it was possible to build a gasoline-driven vehicle.
Lincoln Fay probably never even saw a picture of an automobile before he began drawing up plans for his first model. Americans lagged far behind the Europeans in developing the automobile. But by the late 1880s, bicycle improvements like pneumatic tires, wire wheels, and chain drive systems convinced many people that horseless transportation had a future.
The bicycle, when it was developed, it gave people an opportunity to move around on their own independently. You know, they liked that.
Jim Forrest edited Northern Lights, a newsletter published by the Antique Automobile Club of Minnesota.
The bicycle was hugely popular at the end of the 19th century. Everybody had to have one. Well, they were ready then for something that would follow that, a device that would go on its own power and didn't have to do it.
At first, automobile production was concentrated in Michigan. In 1896, the same year Lincoln Fay got started in Northfield, Henry Ford finished his first automobile in Detroit, Michigan. R.E. Olds produced his first Oldsmobile in Lansing 1 year earlier. But in frontier states like Minnesota, the new machines were a tough sell.
At first, automobiles were relatively expensive. They were looked upon as kind of a rich man's toy. They didn't have a real practical use because of the fact that there weren't any decent roads to drive them on. It was pretty difficult to convince anybody that they could even use these things.
In Northfield, Minnesota, 15-year-old Lincoln Fay was convinced. With $25 in his pocket and some encouragement from his older brother, he set to work.
I first built a backwards tricycle using tandem bicycle wheels with one driving wheel in the rear and two wheels in front for steering. The designing of my first gasoline engine required a lot of thought and study. There were such questions to decide as the size of the crankshaft and bearings, length of connecting rod, size of piston and pin, thickness of cylinder wall, compression space, and a great many others which I had to take into consideration. When it was finally complete, I began building the tricycle's frame. I was due to enter high school in the fall of 1896, but I hated the idea. I was so enthused over my work that it seemed almost impossible to waste the time in school. I was forced to work on the tricycle nights and Saturdays, assembling it in our barns. Toward the spring of 1896, when the machine was almost complete, my brother and I pushed it out in the street for a test run. The engine started, and I got into the seat. My brother jammed in the clutch with a stick, and away I went down the street. When I made the first turn, I nearly tipped over because the steering gear was so sensitive. The tricycle gained speed in every block, and I was due for a smash-up because the street was about to start going downhill. I decided to try to make a turn at the next crossing. Swinging gradually over to one side of the street, I attempted to make the turn, but to keep from tipping over, headed the tricycle up over the sidewalk and into a snowbank. My brother had been following and came up running all out of breath and aglow with excitement. This was one of the most thrilling moments of our lives. The vehicle was pulled out of the snowbank, and we spent a good deal of time trying to start the engine again, but with no success. So, we pushed the contrivance back to the barn. Many times I ventured the prediction to my parents that we would see the time when horse-drawn vehicles would become a thing of the past. But Dad, being a lover of horses, couldn't see it that way and cautioned us continually to leave anything that used gasoline alone or we would be blown up.
Lincoln's father was not the only skeptic. All the earliest autos had problems. They rarely started. Most had horrible brakes, and only a few allowed the driver to back up. The tires blew out, the engine stalled constantly, even the steering was apt to fail, forcing drivers to spend as much time under their vehicles as in them. The unreliable nature of these automobiles even inspired a song. Along loudly, spewing smoke and steam. Horse-loving citizens called the frightening contraptions devil wagons and organized a strong resistance early on.
A community passed a law where if you were driving an automobile on the road and you met a horse-drawn vehicle, you were required to drive your automobile off of the road into the trees or brush. And in some cases, they specified that you had to dismantle the automobile and hide the parts. Now, how they ever enforced that, I don't know, but they actually did pass laws like that.
Lincoln Fay's first car sold quickly. Within weeks of the first test run, a mill worker from a town 20 miles west of Northfield offered to buy the machine for $65. The engine still broken, Lincoln packed it up in a large crate and sent the tricycle to its new owner by train.
With spring in the offing and $65 in the bank, a bright future appeared. We began work on drawings for a new motor with a two-speed transmission, composed of bicycle chains and sprockets, split ring clutches on a jack shaft, and final chain drive. The machine was ready for a test run in the winter of 1898, almost 2 years later. On account of frightening horses and receiving unjust comment from illiterate bystanders of the community, we didn't take the machine out until midnight. We pushed the carriage over to the drinking fountain in the square and filled the water tank. The engine started, and away we went with a lantern tied to the front of the rig as a headlight. The machine continued on its run without a hitch for 3 hours, covering most of the streets in town. My brother and I were two very happy lads. We were well pleased with the performance of the rig. It functioned perfectly, except for a little undue vibration. And we got quite a kick out of the fact that people the next day were having considerable trouble getting information as to what that thing was going around town last night. I decided then and there that none of my vehicles would ever have a horse hitched to them, even if I had to rebuild them in the street where they stopped. And this I lived up to.
The Fay brothers sold their second automobile for $175 to another experimental car builder in town. Altogether, the Fays built 4 automobiles, each one more sophisticated than the last. Their final car was an impressive 5-seater with an air-cooled 4-cylinder engine. It even had a modern steering wheel. Lincoln Fay never built another car. He sold his small operation to a car manufacturing outfit in Minneapolis and lived out his life as an inventor in Northfield. In 1944, he patented a new type of boat anchor. In the meantime, men like Henry Ford and R.E. Olds began mass-producing their automobiles and changed the American landscape.
Why, everybody everywhere is falling for her now.
Say, do you mean the new Ford?
I do, and it's a wow. Lay off, people, lay off, folks. None of your sarcastic jokes. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
And no more bruises, no more aches. He now's got those 4-wheel brakes. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
She's even got a rumble seat and lots of silent class.
The horn just seems to holler out, toot, toot. he shall not pass.
Our story on Lincoln Fay was produced by Annie Feit, researched by Kate Kuhn, and edited by Stephen Smith. Steve Epp played the part of Lincoln Fay. The Minnesota Century Project on MPR is supported by Sarah Kinney Professional Real Estate Services, matching people with property for 21 years. Coldwell Banker, Burnett, Crocus Hill office. Our series Looking at Minnesota 100 Years Ago continues next month with the story of a 13-year-old girl who traveled with her family by horse and buggy to Bagley, Minnesota, in search of their own piece of land.
Not a rattle, not a bit. Lizzie now has lots of it. Henry made a lady out of Lizzie.
There's everything inside her now except the kitchen sink.
A mirror and a powder puff. A shower bath, I think.
I'll bet my socks that this Miss Ford
will live as long as Fanny Ward.
Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie. C-O-D and F-O-B. All you need is Do-Re-Mi. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie. Since he lifted up her face, she babbles at an awful pace. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
She's not like Calvin Coolidge. She's a girl who likes her fun.
She says, imagine anyone who doesn't choose to run.
Good for sister, nice for ma. Everybody ride but